Good afternoon, everyone. So today I'll be talking about Depo, which is a cloud storage system in which clients do not have to trust, that is, assume the correctness of cloud servers or even other clients. This is joint work with my fellow students, Srinath, Sangman, and Alan, and our advisors, Lorenzo Alvizi, Mike Dolin, and Mike Wolfish. To motivate this problem, let me start with an example. So consider the example of a hypothetical picture-sharing website called CloudPic. CloudPic uses an external storage service like Amazon S3 to store all its data. Whenever a user sends new pictures to be added, CloudPic simply sends these pictures to Amazon. And whenever a user requests these pictures, CloudPic fetches these pictures from the Amazon storage service. What is appealing about this model is that the storage provider handles all the details that are necessary to build a highly reliable storage service, ranging from geographic replication to latent error scrubbing or handling disk failovers, et cetera. Unfortunately, there are non-negligible risks that are associated with cloud storage. Let me illustrate with the help of an example. So me and my advisor use this CloudPic web service to share pictures. Now, recently I went on a trip, which I didn't want to let my advisor know about, so I decided let's revoke the permissions from my advisor to access this album. Later, I add some of the pictures from the trip. Unfortunately, due to a simple network partition or due to a simple crash, or even due to a regular load balancing decision, these two requests could be processed by different set of servers. As a result, later when my advisor tries to access my album, he actually would be able to access the pictures that I didn't want him to see. So what this example shows is that failures can cause, even simple day-to-day failures can cause undesired effect in the system. More severe failures like hardware bugs, infrastructure failures, or natural disasters or human error can cause much worse problems ranging from data loss, data corruption, or complete cloud unavailability. So this leads us to a conflict. On one hand, we have cloud storage, which offers a range of very useful properties, a number of benefits. So we want to use cloud storage. But on the other hand, cloud storage as a whole is a black box to the users of this service. They don't know what's happening inside the service. In this talk, I'm going to present a system, Depo, that attempts to resolve this conflict by taking a radical approach to handle fault tolerance. In particular, we started with the goal of completely eliminating trust from the cloud storage. Unfortunately, we could not reach that goal. However, as you will see, we get really close. Depo is able to handle arbitrary faults in the cloud, ranging from a day-to-day failure of one particular server to a correlated failure of two servers or even complete cloud unavailability. More precisely, Depo is able to eliminate trust for a number of very useful properties. A correct client in Depo can always perform a put, which means that the service will always be available for performing writes onto the service. Two correct connected clients can always see each other's operations and therefore attain eventual consistency. No matter what the cloud does, it cannot undetectably hide the puts or operations performed by one of the clients from another client. And finally, Depo provides one of the crucial properties of dependency preservation, which eliminates the problems that I highlighted earlier that resulted due to reordering of messages. What we would have liked to achieve is to minimize trust for availability too. Unfortunately, we couldn't do it. But what we did was actually pretty appealing too. In particular, in Depo, gets are available as long as there is at least one correct node which is willing to supply data for that get. Similarly, an object will be durable if there is one node in the system that is willing to supply the data for that object. Depo adds some mechanisms to make the situation more likely. In particular, we allow any pair of nodes to be able to exchange data so that correct nodes can fetch data from any other nodes without violating the other property that Depo wants to provide. Furthermore, clients can specify an appropriate replication threshold that could enable them to, that could enable the situation that one correct node has the data much more likely in practice. So in the rest of the talk, I'm going to talk about how Deepo works and what properties does it provide and how much does it cost to provide these properties. So this diagram illustrates the high-level architecture of Deepo. I'm showing here a number of servers and number of clients. A particular set of clients in Deepo share a volume, and we run different instances of Deepo protocol for different volumes. As is common in high availability services, we have multiple servers which replicate all the data. A client can access the service through any of these servers. We do not require overlapping quorums, read-write quorums for accessing the service, as we want to be highly available. And finally, to deal with extreme cloud failure scenarios, we allow the clients to fall back to client-to-client communication. One of the key problems that Deepo addresses is the problem of providing a reasonable and consistent view of the data that clients see. So this means that we have to prevent faults in the system from being able to reorder or omit operations. To achieve this goal, so intuitively what this means is that if there are two correct nodes in the system, if one of them performs some operations, the other client would be able to see. And if one client performs two operations which are dependent on each other, then other clients will observe these operations in the correct order. This means we should prevent omissions and reordering in the system, and Deepo adds three key mechanisms to deal with this problem. So first, it adds some metadata to each put that a client performs. This metadata is then fully replicated at all nodes in the system and forms a part of the local state that each node maintains. Any metadata that a client receives goes through a number of checks. These checks essentially ensure that the local view that a client sees, the local view of the data, satisfies some well-defined properties. In the remaining part of this part of the talk, I'll explain what this metadata is and what specific checks do we perform. So one of the key messages, so when a node performs a put, it creates what we call an update. And here what I'm describing is the metadata of this update. So there are some expected fields like node ID, which corresponds to an identifier of the node that performs this operation, a key, a hash of the value, a local clock, which is a counter that each node maintains, and a history, which is an efficient encoding of all the operations that this node has seen in the past. All nodes store all the metadata, and this forms part of their local state. I'm not going to talk about the details of how this state is garbage collected in this talk. So next, I describe what are the key checks that a node performs to ensure that it sees a consistent view of the data. So whenever a node receives an update that is created by a node N, we need to ensure that there are no omissions so that I see all the updates on which this update depends. And also, there are no two updates that claim to be issued at the same timestamp. So for example, there should be only one update that is the third update issued by a given node. There cannot be two different third updates from a given node. So these are intuitively the checks that a node performs. Unfortunately, one of the key problems with these checks is that while they are very useful in ensuring that the local view of a node is consistent, they cannot guarantee any global properties. What a fault can cause is that two different correct nodes, A and B in this example, can see different, mutually inconsistent, but individually consistent views of the system. So for example, if a fault causes a node A to see a red update and a node B to see an orange update, both of these views might be individually consistent, but such that subsequently if node A tries to send any updates to node B won't be able to accept it because it depends on an inconsistent read update. And similarly, if node B tries to send any updates to A, node A won't be able to accept it because it depends on an inconsistent orange update. So in other words, these forks partition the correct nodes into disjoint sets such that all future updates that these nodes issue are conceptually tainted by these faulty updates. And therefore, the checks that they perform will fail when they try to receive an update that is tainted by a different history. The high-level impact of these forks is that they prevent our system from attaining eventual consistency. And this is a fundamental problem which has been there in a large body of work starting Sunder in 2002. All of these works suffer from the limitation that once a fault has occurred in the system, it will cause correct nodes to be partitioned into different sets such that these sets are not able to communicate and therefore not able to attain eventual consistency. So one of the key goals of this system is to provide a storage service, and to be practical, we should be able to resolve this problem. And our system uses a very simple idea of joining these forks to relax consistency a little bit, but being able to guarantee eventual consistency. So intuitively, what we do is that we treat the updates that were issued by a faulty node, F, as updates that are issued by by multiple virtual correct nodes, in this case, F prime and F double prime. So we pretend that F prime issued this red update, and F double prime issues this orange update, and therefore, subsequently, these nodes would be able to exchange updates. But we still don't want any faulty nodes in our system to continue damaging the system. So we include an eviction protocol that ensures that any such nodes who try to issue multiple conflicting updates are evicted from the system so that they cannot continue damaging the system. So overall, what I've shown here is how do we convert faults into concurrency to allow correct nodes to converge to a common state. Now, this concurrency can introduce conflicts. And by conflicts, I mean two different modifications that are done concurrently to the same object. What is important to note here, however, is that this is not a new problem that Deepo introduces. In fact, due to our desire for high availability, we are already tolerating the possibility of conflicting writes in the system. Furthermore, the solution to handle such conflicting writes is also not new. The applications that are built on services like Amazon S3 already assume that there could be possibility of multiple concurrent writes, so they include mechanisms to deal with such concurrent conflicting writes. All we do is return all the conflicting writes that have occurred. So in summary, what I've presented so far is a very basic protocol that allows us to enforce some simple consistency property. To do so, we do some local checks. This allows us to ensure safety, and we join forks and reduce faults to concurrency to ensure liveness. Using the description that I get, combining these ideas, we're able to enforce a novel consistency semantics that we call fork join causal, which is suitable for environments where we want to minimize trust. In the rest of the talk, I'll describe what property does Deepo provide and how much does it cost to provide these properties. So I don't want you to look into all of these properties and try to understand what each of these is. The main goal here is to convince you that there are a number of properties that you would expect from a storage system that Deepo provides. And more importantly, most of these properties, with the exception of one, Deepo can provide to any subset of correct nodes. So for example, Deepo can guarantee eventual consistency in any subset of correct nodes. Correct nodes can always write, etc. Next, I'm going to focus on this one specific property where we cannot completely eliminate trust. So ideally, it would be desirable if we can completely eliminate trust for even get availability and durability. Unfortunately, that would require us to fully replicate all the database at all the clients and all the servers. This would be undesirable, of course, because it'll impose prohibitive cost. So what Depot really does is it tries to address this limitation in two key ways. First, it minimizes the number of required nodes that are required to service a GET. So if any node in the system, whether it's correct or faulty, is willing to supply the data that we need to service a GET, then we will be able to serve that GET. Similarly, if any node in the system is willing to supply an object, whether that node is correct or behaving or faulty, we will be able to ensure that that object is durable. In addition, we can also make it likely that a correct node has data. For example, SSPs already replicate data on multiple servers. And Depot allows clients to employ additional replication, so you can employ additional servers, you can keep your data locally, etc. So this comes to a contingency plan. So what if I want to keep my data really safe and want to protect myself against correlated SSP failure, which we saw yesterday that they're probably more likely than we believed earlier. So the key idea here is that we were already not trusting the storage servers. So we can choose any node that we believe does not have correlation with a SSP failure and replicate our data on that node. In particular, our prototype forces all the clients to store all the puts that they create. So every node, when it tries to issue a new put, it's going to store the data for that particular put. Other choices are conceivable where you choose two different storage service providers and replicate data on both of them. The key property that enables us to enable this optimization is that the metadata that we are propagating carries enough information to route the GET request to the appropriate node that has the data. An alternative, of course, would be to keep a full copy of your own data as is proposed by some other systems. So what this enables Depot to achieve is that despite complete SSP failure, which I indicate here at 300 seconds, Depot is able to continue working, although at an increased staleness cost. So in the rest of the talk, I will talk about how much does Depot cost. And the three key metrics that I consider are the GET and the put latency cost, the resource utilization cost in terms of the CPU processing cost at clients and server, the network cost at clients and server, and the storage cost. Then, in order to make more intuitive sense of these numbers, we will convert these numbers into a common dollar cost metric so that people can get an intuition as to how much would it cost in today's world to build a system like Depot. And for this, I will use some approximate numbers based on current resource prices. So let me recap the sources of overhead in Depot. So remember that we are adding some metadata to each put. This metadata includes a signature, a partial version vector, and a SHA-256 hash that summarizes the history. This metadata is fully replicated at all the nodes in our system, and it will impose some cost. Whenever each node receives this metadata, it performs a number of checks, which include a SHA-256 check, an RSA verification, and another SHA-256 check. Whenever a node receives a response to a GET request, it performs a SHA-256 check on the data to ensure that the data matches the metadata that it has. So the setup that I use consists of 12 nodes on a local MLAP cluster. We configure 8 of them to act as clients and 4 of them to act as server. I give more details about these machines We're connected using a 1 gigabit per second link. Each client issues about 1 request per second. The key to which the request is issued is randomly chosen from a set of 1,000 different keys. And we measure latency and per request cost in terms of the various metrics that I described earlier. To provide a reference point, we emulate traditional cloud storage. And the way we do that is we configure the servers in Deepo to not do any cryptographic checks that they were doing in full version of Deepo. Furthermore, clients don't need to receive any metadata because they're going to trust the server to return the most recent port for every key. So let's look at the latency values for gets and puts for a 10 kilobyte object. So I consider three different variants of a simple baseline system, a base system that I just described, a base plus hash system that I'll call hash, in which I add the additional SHA-256 integrity check on all the data that I store on the SSP, B plus H plus sign that I will call sign for short, in which clients sign the data that they store on the SSP, and finally, Deepo. And the y-axis here is normalized with respect to Deepo. So one is what Deepo is going to look like in this graph. Now we compare three different metrics. The first one is So as we can see in this graph, the cost of gets in Deepo are marginally higher than the cost of a baseline system, because the only additional checks that we are doing is a SHA-256 verification. Notice that the cost of hash and sign variants is higher than Deepo, because in Deepo, the signature verification is done on the puts when the metadata is distributed to all the clients. The cost for puts, on the other hand, is significantly higher, but it results from the signature that we are performing on the data. Once we are willing to pay the cost for the signature generation, the additional cost that Deepo imposes is fairly small and acceptable. Next, I show the overheads for gets. In terms of the network cost between client and server, in terms of the CPU cost consumed at the clients, and in terms of the CPU consumed at the server. And as I said earlier, I compared these three metrics. So as I said earlier, the bandwidth that Deepo transfers on a get is the same as the bandwidth that is transferred in a traditional system, so there is no cost in terms of the bandwidth there. The CPU cost in Deepo at the client is higher because it is going to do this some extra checks. And the CPU cost on the servers is pretty similar to the baseline system. So I'm showing, for puts, I'm showing a subset of all the metrics that we measured. The remaining metrics were identical to the baseline systems, therefore I'm not going to report that. So the four metrics that I report here are the client-server network bandwidth, the storage cost for each put, the CPU cost at the client, and the CPU cost at the server. And what we notice is that Deepo adds some metadata and distributes this metadata to all the clients. So that will add to our network cost. Deepo also requires the clients to store this metadata, as well as authoring clients store the data. And this adds to our storage cost at the client. Finally, the CPU cost of the client is higher because the clients are performing the signature as well as they're verifying all the metadata that they receive. And the CPU cost of the server is a little higher because they're also verifying this metadata. I'll explain to you in a little bit how these numbers convert into a common dollar currency. So the cost model that I use for that conversion is based on roughly current pricing. Of course, in our paper, we describe all the numbers, so you're welcome to convert them into a common pricing model to see if Deepo is suitable for your environment. So using these rough pricing numbers, we get the following. So in conclusion, looking at this graph, what we can say is that the cost on gets, as expected, is their extra overhead is very small. The overheads of storing the data at the clients is higher, but presumably most enterprise users that use a cloud storage provider would anyways want to store the data locally for ensuring durability and sustaining cloud failures. The cost on puts is also higher because we are distributing extra metadata and we are performing extra checks. Let me quickly go over some of the related work. There is a lot of work that has focused on dealing with server faults using this idea of forking. All of these works typically assume there is one server, and any failure in that server causes the system to fork. As a result, the system is not able to guarantee eventual consistency, and furthermore, the system is not available if that particular server fails. There has also been a lot of work on quorums and state machine replications, which is based on the assumption that there is a bounded number of faults in the system. Unlike Depo, they're not able to tolerate arbitrary faults in the system. There are many other works that I don't have time to summarize here. So in conclusion, I've presented Depo, which is a cloud storage system that attempts to minimize trust in the cloud. And our approach is we take a radical approach to achieve this fault tolerance. We assume that any set of nodes can fail in an arbitrary way. And even then, we are able to eliminate trust for a variety of important properties and minimize trust for get availability and durability. Thank you, and I'll be happy to take questions.
Hey, Dave Koch, Nicta. So in your performance evaluation slide there, so you had a performance evaluation slide
yeah.
where you were talking about the relative overheads that you'd shown. So you were showing, what was it? You were showing the...
latency or the...
Previously it was... just before here. So your CPU overhead, so you're saying your overheads are relatively modest. So what you've graphed here is the... baseline is the cost divided by the depot cost, right? What you've graphed here is the cost that you've shown is the cost that you're measuring divided by the baseline cost, right?
Divided by depot cost.
Yeah, the depot cost,
right?
The one that you're thinking about, and I would argue that that's somewhat masking the effect. So if you actually look at here the graph in the middle, which is the CPU time on the client, I mean the depot cost there is something on the order of 5 times the baseline cost,
right?
Which is an overhead of 400%.
Right, but...
Which is not minimal.
Right, that's a great point you make there. But the key thing to observe here is that in the real value of these numbers is actually very small. And that's why when we basically converted these numbers into a common metric, so we measured how much does it cost to get this much CPU, how much does it cost to get this much bandwidth, and when we try to aggregate these two numbers into a common metric, what we realize is that the actual cost of running Depo for these gets is fairly insignificant, which is what I. So if you look at the get cost for performing a terabyte of gets, the baseline system and the Depo cost are pretty much the same. So you're right that the CPU costs are significant, but the point here is that if you're going to run the system in a cloud deployment. You can get more CPU for free. CPU is pretty cheap. The main cost actually comes from the bandwidth. And once you're minimizing the bandwidth, the overall cost of your system is going to be pretty easy.
Right. So I guess my point was just that the previous slide that you put up wasn't actually supporting what you'd said.
Sorry, what?
The slide you'd presented wasn't actually supporting that. It's clearer once you make it clear later.
But. Right. So the overheads are, I mean, for CPU overheads, is obviously not going to be small. We are performing signature. In a traditional system, you're just sending a request, receiving a request. In Depo, you're going to perform hash verification, so the cost is not going to be small. But the point is that in a practical, when we try to convert them into a normalized metric,
So working on the assumption that CPU time is cheap, your overall cost overhead is low,
yes,
but the actual overhead is very high.
Great, yes.
Right.
Thanks.
David Schultz, MIT. So I understand that your system works by essentially gossiping the log to all of the nodes in the system, but the actual data are only stored on the servers and the node that performed the last write to a given object.
That's correct.
So I'm concerned about what Byzantine clients can do. In particular, a Byzantine client could gossip an operation and pretend that the servers are unavailable so that it's the only node in the system that actually has a copy of that data. Then it could selectively provide that data to some of the good nodes. The good nodes could compute on it. So that version is now required for your consistency model. But now the Byzantine client goes away and it refuses to provide the data. So you can't read the version of the object that's required
for consistency. Right, that's an excellent question. It's great that you've made that observation. We actually include a mechanism that we call receipts to deal with the situation when exactly the problem that you're highlighting occurs. And I described that in the paper. So essentially what happens is that when a client receives a response to a GET, in addition to the things that I described, I omitted some of the details. And it also performs one of the checks that enables it to ensure that the data is sufficiently replicated. And this bound is, you can specify how much bound you want. So like, if you want some data to be replicated at 10 nodes before a client wants to see that data, you could configure it. If you want the data to be replicated at all the servers, then you can configure that.
Okay, so essentially you have in your system some bound F such that...
There's no bound. Like, you can specify, okay...
Right, so you specify some bound, right?
Right, so I only want... A client might say that I only want to see data that has been replicated on at least 4 nodes. Or I only want to see data that has been replicated at 3 of the 4 servers and 1 client. If not, then what the client can request, actually, is that when it tries to perform this GET, it can fetch the data from this node so that it can ensure that even if the original writer dies, it still has the data. And when it sends its data to other nodes, it can...
Okay, and so then F nodes are required to be correct in order to ensure availability then, right?
No. And we're able to provide availability as long as there is one correct node in the system that is willing to supply the data.
Okay, I guess I'll have to read how your receipt implementation works. Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's thank Prince again.